Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Mike Barnett, and I am with Brant Berglund from Walla University School of Theology, and Bob Resch, a retired physician and someone I share Sabbath school teaching duties with occasionally here. So, gentlemen, I'm thinking about a problem that I've noticed within our own church at times, and that is the problem of using certain concepts to motivate people to seek Christ. Shortness of time, the uncertainty of life, the hope of reward, or the fear of punishment or a negative outcome. Should these things be the motivators for us to seek Christ?
Well, shortness of time has been employed for a very long time. Obviously, the time was not short. So if we preach of the shortness of time, we could be embarrassed next month or next year. Is that really what we want to do? Or do we want to say, God is the same, I would like to be different. God, please make me different.
And even if time was short, is that still the motivator?
Because we all have a certain number of years somewhere along the line, and we don't know what it is. So, yeah, I hope to be ready to meet God today or tomorrow or sometime soon. But I've given up timelines and calendars and calculations.
I would say in an ideal world, Mike, that the best motivation to seek God is because we're responding simply to His Holy Spirit in our lives, and we respond because we sense that and we move towards Him. But if I'm realistic in the evangelistic work I've done, I have seen so many different types of people, and they respond to so many different types of things. And I'm not saying any of these are ideal, this list here. Shortness of time, uncertainty of life, hope of reward, fear of punishment. There are many people, sadly, I think, that have come to an understanding of the loving character of God because they were scared to death of hell and the idea of that they're going to be tormented forever. And they said, well, I better seek something better. And they came to God. But I don't think they stayed in a place where they continued to fear Him. They found His love. And so while I'm never going to say, hey, we should go out there and proclaim, you know, ever-burning hell as a means of winning people, or, hey, you know, you better make a decision today because you could be dead tomorrow, right? For some people, that is the truth, sadly. You know, the time could be short. And so I think we need to be a little gracious towards some of these while at the same time saying these are not the ideal. I don't know. Is there a fairness to that?
I like that because one of the founders of my church was deeply religious when she was a child, and terrified of God at the same time. And it took her 30, 40 years to get over that deep-seated fear of God. But when it finally developed, she could say the most wonderful things about God that would just draw you naturally to Him.
So I guess my response to you, Brant, would be something along like this. Is the notion of the shortness of time and the uncertainty of life going to be what actually saves you, or is it going to be the loveliness of Jesus's character?
Yeah. So I might have a sense that if I can get someone to realize how fragile life is, I might be able to then get them to listen to the character of a loving God.
Jonathan Edwards had the first part, but we're not sure about the second.
Yeah.
Well, can't we just use the loveliness of Jesus' character more than we would use these other notions, which, by the way, we are very good at using these other notions, shortness of time, the uncertainty of life, the hope of reward and punishment, you know, fear of punishment. We're very good at using those. So, you know, I bring this up because when I was younger, these were the kinds of things that seemed to be pushed at me as motivators, as the motivators, and I would push back.
They're almost a bait and switch. We're going to get you to fear or to have a hope in something so that we can present to you the doctrines of our church rather than saying, hey, I just want to share with you about my friend. Can I tell you about my friend Jesus?
Yeah.
Ah, but... And yet for some people, I think that these – are all these true? Is there a sense in which the biblical text tells us that time is short? Yes, it gives us a sense that we shouldn't, say, put off the coming of Christ. Is life uncertain? That is true as well. Is there a reward for those who overcome? Yes. Is there something to avoid? Yes. All of those are true. But you're asking, Mike, if those are good motivators – for faith in Christ.
Could it be that bad news requires some kind of a buildup so you're ready to receive it? Good news, you can tell anybody anytime.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the things I put in my document that the listening audience can grab onto is that most human beings do have plenty of time to embrace Christ. Most do. But even if time is short or life is uncertain, and I'm acknowledging that could be the case, but even if time is short or life is uncertain, it is still the loveliness of Christ's character that matters.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't these other things that matter so much. And for the most part, they're not always true of each person. I mean, I'm going to be 70 years old this next week, right? So I'm no spring chicken. So when I look at that, I think, okay, I've had quite a bit of time. So back when people were trying to use the shortness of time as the motivator on me, well, it turned out to be wholly inaccurate.
You feel a little swindled, don't you?
Yeah. I
mean, maybe you were manipulated spiritually.
Exactly.
Right, right.
And it troubles me just a little bit. So, you know, here are some interesting stories in the Bible where people had other, I think, motivators. So here's one where the devil comes up to God and he says to the Lord, "Does Job fear God for nothing?" And so here the motivator, according to Satan, is Job fears you, God, because you're buying him off.
Because you're a rewarder.
You're rewarding him.
Yep. Right? Well, it's almost like a bribe.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's this story of 2 Samuel 19. We find this guy named Barzillai, the Gileadite. And he has apparently supported King David in his absence when Absalom rebelled against him, right? And David says to him, "Come over with me and I will provide for you in Jerusalem at my side." And Barzillai says, "You know what? Why? Why should you recompense me with a reward? Just let me go home. Just let me go home." In other words, the reward wasn't the reason why he was doing what he was doing. He was not supporting David so he could get a reward from him. And then we look at the story of the woman of Shunem who went to great lengths to show hospitality to Elisha, you know, a major addition to their home. She also made it clear she did not do these things so that she could receive something in return. In fact, she said, "Did I ask you for a son?" And then we think of the powerful reason why the Bible does not tell us whether Naaman or his wife released the little Israelite slave girl who graciously shared her faith with Naaman so he could be healed in 2 Kings chapter 5. The Bible doesn't say he went home and set her free because it would taint her motives. So even though we might hope that he set her free or provided her with a better life, if that were part of the story, then we would get the idea that's why she did what she did. She did not have unselfish reasons for doing what she did. So that would be problematic, I think.
It's eloquent sometimes to not say anything.
Yeah. So how about this story where Judas goes in? So we're thinking about rewards. Judas goes in, and they're greatly pleased that he's willing to give up Jesus, and they agree to give him a reward. Right? Those are, you know, he acts treacherously, treasonously betrays Jesus because he desired a reward. So the hope of reward and the fear of a bad outcome, those are not great motives.
We actually see that in the parable of the talents as well. The man who was given the one talent, when in Matthew 25, it says that when his master came back, he said, "I knew you were a hard man, and because I sensed that you were unreasonable, I hid, you know, the talent that you gave me to invest." The fear, right? Fear of punishment. I thought you were a kind of guy that would throw it back at me. And these are very bad motivators. I think about Paul, though, on the road to Damascus when Christ meets him and introduces himself in a dramatic way. You know, were there any of these motives in the conversion of Saul? And it was more or less Jesus just saying, "Saul, you're hurting my people." And I think there was a sense of fear. Paul says, "Wait a second, I've been persecuting the church of the living God. I've been working at cross purposes with God." I think there's some fear there, but I don't think it's fear exerted from outside. I think it's fear that came from within where he says, "What have I done?" And that's a different kind of motivation.
Well, exactly. Fear was inherent in Saul. because he wished to incite fear in the followers of Jesus. That was exactly the plan.
All right, so running out of time quick. So I had some challenging thoughts that I laid out in some of the written material, and it had to do with this biblical text in Matthew 22, where Jesus responds to some people and he says, "Your mistake is that you don't know the scriptures and you don't know the power of God. For when the dead rise, they will neither marry nor be given in marriage. In this respect, they will be like angels in heaven." Now, I could wish, frankly, that somebody had said to Jesus, "Well, what are angels in heaven like?" Because that might have spelled things out a little more clearly for me. But then I began, you know, reading some of the things that we have in Adventism, where, you know, someone like Ellen White will say something like this in her printed stuff, that that we absolutely needed the companionship of someone who was human like us, that even communion with angels would not have satisfied our desire for sympathy and companionship. And then in other places where she seems to comment that children who are going to be in heaven will be given back to their mothers, placed in their mother's arms. And I've wondered, how am I supposed to understand relationships in heaven? When you're younger, you know, there's a major concern about this, I think, for good reasons. Maybe when you're older, not as much. But I think it's still a serious problem that's not really been dealt with very well in the church.
There's an intense interest among teenagers on what will be the state of men and women in heaven. And Jesus said it was going to be different. And I would respond, if asked about that, from what you know of Jesus so far, if he says it's going to be different, do you think he's saying different better or different worse?
Yeah, and that's, I think about that too, Bob. I think the same thing. In Genesis, when God created everything, he said it was good. But then when he made Adam and Eve, right, the two humans in his own image and put them together, he said, now it's very good. I can only imagine that whatever God has in store after this earth, after this life, whatever those relationships are, that if this life is good, that will be better.
So one last quick question, real quick. How is the existence of other worlds populated by other beings, people, whatever you want to call them, important to the Adventist understanding of the cosmic conflict between good and evil?
We're not alone.
It's an in-house story because it's not in the Bible.
Oh, whoa, whoa.
The Bible doesn't say anything about other planets with other people living on them.
I've listed in this sheet a number of Bible texts, Bob, so I'm going to take exception.
You have about 15 seconds.
I don't have enough time, but you and I will talk later, or you can read my document because I've listed some biblical texts.
Yes, please.
So we're running out of time. Thank you, Amber, Amos. Thank you, listening audience, Brent and Bob.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.